When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Mark Boris, and this is Straight Talk.
The thing that I got out of Wayne is that he's a very complex guy. And the only way that he's been able to deal with his childhood trauma was to be a coach. He gives young footballers what he never had.
One more grand final than any other coach.
Very rare for a coach to stay successful for that length of time.
The bloke you wrote this book about is often referred to as super coach. What is it about someone like him that makes him such a great character in rugby league?
He manages to earn their trust like no other coach. That's what fascinated me, that a 70-year-old man could somehow get a 20-year-old footballer to trust him implicitly.
Did he have a technique, or have you dug into how that works?
Wayne is almost like giving himself therapy by coaching these young blokes to have a special sort of life and a special career, because he didn't have that. His father was just never there for the family, and they just didn't have two 20-cent pieces to rub together. They were broke. When Wayne was 12...
The father disappeared.
The Roosters against the Dragons in 2010.
The Roosters maintaining a narrow lead at half-time.
Whatever Bennett did at half-time turned the game around.
Bennett walked into the room and said... and walked out.
Serious?
Mm. That's all he said.
That's all it took.
That's all it took.
Webby, Andrew Webster.
Andrew, yeah.
Sir, welcome to Straight Talk, mate.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
It's been a long time coming. We've been trying to get this stuff organised forever. And it's around your book, and we'll talk about your book in a moment. But I want to just go back a little bit. You're a journo at with the Fairfax Group.
Mm-hmm.
Your area of specialty is sport, in particular rugby league. What about before that? What did you have to come through the ranks as a journalist? Were you a political correspondent? What's the deal?
Oh, I did my cadetship in the Hunter Valley. I went to university in Newcastle. I didn't want to be a bricklayer like everyone else in my family. So my father drilled that pretty hard into me from a very young age. Knuckled down at school, knuckled down at your part-time job. And I just sort of organically went towards writing and sport. That's what I always wanted to write. So I went to uni in Newcastle and then did a cadetship at a small paper called the Mail and Mercury, which was great because I got to do police rounds, court, everything, council. But mainly, yeah, always coming back to sport. And I always thought I'd grow up and be a serious journalist and do something different, go into politics, but I just stayed in sport the whole time.
Now, you know, I've had sitting in that chair, sometimes your nemesis, sometimes he's your nemesis, and you're his nemesis. It's Peter Vlandis. And we go back to, and, you know, I like to go back to sort of understand who the dude is. I want to, you know, who Andrew Webster is. What drives you? Is it curiosity about people?
It does. I'm always interested in people. I think people is what drives me to tell stories about them, you know. And I always find with footy or cricket or any sport, really, it's all about the individuals involved. And I really like – the thing that I love about league in particular is that it's – like so many of these players come from, you know, pretty low socioeconomic backgrounds and get to where they are. And it's like it really sort of saves their life. I like telling those stories, you know. And I just see the good that football does and sport does. And I think it gets it's easy to dismiss The best advice I ever got was from Roy Masters. We're having a beer. This would be 20 years ago.
Love him.
Good old Roy and loves a schooner. And I remember having a beer with him and he said, don't be too much of a smart ass about players because you don't know what they put their body through every week. And it was probably the best advice I ever got. So I'm always conscious of what players put their bodies and minds through to play every week. And everyone can go, oh, you know, they get the $1 million and they get the life and they get, you know, the glory. But, you know, it's there's a lot of hard work there that people don't really understand.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I like trying to tell that, to convey that in the stories I write.
Do you think that this back – if I go back to the 70s and the glory days of the Sydney Roosters, which, you know, we're not going to talk too much about that, but the glory days in the mid-70s, there were a lot of characters around in rugby league as players and as coaches, but as players as well. Do you think there's as many characters around today? I mean, I know you want to tell stories of players that might have come from a crappy background and decided and they worked on their life and got a better outcome. You know, the Johns boys, there's a whole lot of them to, you know, examples of that today. But what about the characters of rugby league players today compared to before? Or is that not a fair comparison?
I think they do. They're probably just not allowed to beat that. You know, I think the media scrutiny is so much that they're too scared to be themselves a lot of the time. But I think you're seeing more and more. I think social media has allowed them to take control of themselves. Like players have got their own podcasts. They've got, you know, they can, you look at someone like Latrell. Latrell always sort of, you know, rightly or wrongly, if he wants to spin a message, and he'll do it through his, you know, through his
Instagram,
to 200,000 followers. So I think athletes here are finding the power in their social media platforms, like they have in the US in particular, the last few years. I think there's been a lag here with Australian sports stars, but they're doing it more and more. Like they can call out a journalist if they get it wrong. They can call out a club, you know, if they've done the wrong thing by them. So, I think the characters are there, but they're just, I think in a lot of ways they were too scared to show themselves for a long time. But I think social media is giving them that platform to, you know, unfiltered, give them exactly who they are, you know.
Do you think it's who they are though, Webby, or do you think it's more the cause that they're chasing? So Latrell's a good example, but Luai's a good example, you know, like Luai's a character.
Yeah.
And,
I like Jerome.
Yeah, but a lot of people put Jerome.
People misunderstand him. I sat down with him for a big interview before Origin 1 this year, and he's such a lovely kid. Like I find with all those Penrith guys, to me that shows you how the media can manipulate a message. Like they just have painted Penrith as this, you know, these young, arrogant, cocky side. When if you actually go and talk to them, like Nathan Cleary's probably one of the nicest blokes you'll ever meet. You know, he's a harmless kid, like, but he's been sort of painted to be this really overconfident or just that all he's, you know, he's just painted in a negative light. And I can't work it out. I really can't.
Yeah, but like it's nearly like, because Penrith winners, it's nearly like Penrith's been promoted as a boomboxing, rappers. Islanders hanging out together and arrogant against the rest of the competition.
Yeah.
That's how it looks to me.
That's how it looks, but I don't think they are. If you meet them, they're not that at all. You know, they're always – I'll never forget when Luai and To'o were first picked for New South Wales, like they were going up and introducing themselves to journos. You know, they've actually – there's a real humility there, you know, in that team. I just think sometimes there's a – the media can get it wrong, and if you're not if you don't play ball with the media like certain journalists or certain executives want you to, then they can turn a message very quickly against you.
If I look back at Penrith in the 90s, and I look at MG, I look at Royce, to a lesser extent Freddie, and Brandy, they weren't trendy. They're just hard-nosed, highly skilled footballers. Mm. And I think Gus was a coach for a bit there.
Yep.
If I look at Penrith today, Ivan's the nicest bloke in the world, literally one of the nicest guys you're ever going to meet. And I think Nathan, I've only met him once or twice, mate, Nathan's the same. It looks like a totally different vibe coming out of Penrith today compared to what it was in the 90s.
Yeah.
Is that just a reflection of Penrith's become richer and more wealthier and a better known joint. You know, like, I don't mean as a club, but as an area.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But I also think it's just a reflection of rugby league. You know,
we like to hate the winners.
We do hate to hate the winners. Come on, you're a chook.
Yeah, I know.
How much hate's been leveled at your club?
Well, but
over
the problem
years?
Is they still hate us and we didn't win, and and people still hate South and they didn't win. But we both had shockers in 2023, but now it doesn't mean that they move the hatred from one club to another club.
But before that, it was Melbourne.
Yeah, yeah.
When Melbourne had their,
but everyone still hates Melbourne.
They do.
So in other words, the hatred doesn't die. We just had another club.
I hate all teams, particularly my own, the Dragons.
So how did you become a Dragons?
My father was. Yeah. So I was born into it.
You are a Newcastle boy,
I grew up on the North Coast, but I went to I spent a lot of time in Uni. Went to Uni in Newcastle.
So, but no one hates Newcastle. Everyone loves Newcastle.
They do.
Dragons, you know, it's sort of a
empathy. Do you have any empathy for us at all?
For sure, that's for sure. I mean, we do feel sorry for the Dragons. I'm trying to work out. I want to talk to you about characters because the bloke you wrote this book about is one of the great characters, and the bloke where I first knew of you was probably one of the greatest characters that you wrote a book about in 2009, 2010. I remember reading the book. It was a great read. It was Jack Gibson.
Yeah.
One of the great characters of rugby league.
Hmm.
He wasn't cool. He sort of was cool, but he wasn't cool. He was man of few words, said very little, had an unbelievably interesting backstory, which you managed to dig into, and was a great, you know, was a big part of Eastern Suburbs' good years in the 70s. Then went off to Parramatta after that. Jack, in my money, was the original super coach, which is the name of your book about Jack Gibson. Maybe you can tell me why did you want to write about that particular character?
So with Jack, that book on Jack was my first book.
Was it an authorized biography?
It was. So I wrote a story about Jack for the Herald around 2008 when it was very obvious he was going to be coach of the century. They were going to name the team of the century. And I think it said so much about Jack's just the standing that Jack had, that no journalist or even people were too scared to delve into his health at that time.
Why are they scared of Jack?
Because it was Jack.
he's an imposing character. Physically,
he's a big guy. He wore the jackets. He had rugby league royalty.
But on the front,
but also as you said, he had a backstory. He was he didn't suffer fools. He was very intimidating, But also, I just think because of his stature, that people weren't going to write about the fact that he was in a nursing home suffering from dementia. So I wrote a letter to Judy Gibson and said, "Look, I really want to honour Jack with a piece around the team of the century." And I went down and I met Judy and John and the whole family and interviewed them and interviewed Mass and a few others for this piece. And then I wrote it, and then soon after Jack died, and I just had amassed so much stuff, Mark, while doing that piece, and I thought this guy deserves a proper biography where I speak to as many people as possible.
I thought the book was very kind to him, to be honest with you, but it was quite, from what I knew, I knew Jack very well. I also thought it was fairly accurate too, in terms of his backstory.
Mm.
He had a very interesting backstory. Like Jack, you said didn't suffer fools. Jack was not just a football coach. I mean, Jack worked on the Doors. He was a tough bastard.
Yeah.
And like didn't act tough, was tough.
Mm.
And did things that were tough. Like, you know, and you could get verification of people outside of rugby league that'll tell you what he allegedly did.
Yeah.
With his hands. So you know, nobody messed with him.
No.
It was a time when you could get away with that sort of shit too. You wouldn't get away with it today.
Well, he worked on Thomas Tuobring in the 50s, SP Bookmaker. Yeah, he rolled.
He rolled. But it was very much a reflection of stuff that happened in those days.
That's how life was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a different sort of vibe to what it is today.
Yeah.
I mean, you would never get a top coaching job if that was your backstory today, because there'd be too many people coming after you and everyone would be too scared to put you up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've got to be going, wow, we're just, you know, like I'm on the board of Roosters, we'd be getting nervous about that. We'd be saying, well, hang on a minute, what's going to be the blowback from the media? What's going to be the blowback from our members? What's going to be the blowback generally? What are we, how are we going to look as a club? What's it going to do to the club's reputation? Whereas, you know, back in the 70s, we had no problem with that. And Jack was our coach, as you know.
Mm.
But what is it about someone like him that makes him such a great character in rugby league?
I think his backstory, you know. And also, I think there's, because the media's got such a big role in rugby league, I think the way that an individual carries themselves publicly adds to that aura. And Bennett's a great example of it. Like, I think him and Jack, who were very, very close, they had that, like, they just have a really different way of expressing themselves. And Jack in particular, there's a story that I loved about Jack, and this isn't to do with rugby league, but when he was playing cricket for Waverley, fast bowler, he'd, like, the ball would hit the pads and he just, this is how Jack would appeal. He'd turn around and look at the umpire and go, any news? And the poor old umpire would be too scared not to give the batsman.
But he
just had a different way of phrasing things, and you know, I think that's the thing with Wayne. Like, they're engaging people, and they're great. They're money for an author or a journalist, because they just, what they say always is framed in a different way to most people, because I think outside the square, probably why they've been, you know, so successful.
Well, they give you the grab, so you know, Jack's.
They do it without even meaning to.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
It's just, it's naturally. That's how they naturally speak.
Yeah, and Wayne was more economical in terms of what he'd say. He wouldn't say much. And by the way, he's very good at getting stuck into journalists, fearless. Jack was very economical in terms of, well, not economical, he didn't say much, but when he did say something, it was said in a way that you would never expect to hear it, like done good or something like that. Like,
yeah.
But he was extraordinarily intelligent.
Well, the great one, I know it's a cliche, but I like for that Gibson book, I talked to Sterlo about the kick to the seagulls line, and Sterlo had no idea what he was talking about at all. He said, you know, I want you to kick to the seagulls today, and here's Sterlo in the middle of the cricket ground on playing for Parramatta, and he looked up and there he saw the seagulls at the other end of the field, and he knew exactly what he meant, kick to space, because that's where the seagulls are at the cricket ground. Like, it's just, you know, instead of saying kick to space, kick to the seagulls. I love that shit. So like from a journo's point of view, I just find that fascinating.
Yeah, and in terms of characters then, I mean, you know, this guy here is often referred to as super coach, as one of the super coaches.
Yeah.
And he's had a much longer life in footy than Jack ever did. Like, this guy's coached, I don't know.
50 years.
Biggest
just,
record.
Just over 50 years he's been a full-time coach.
Yeah, totally. And but equally a big character, but different style to Jack.
Very much so. Well, he doesn't drink and he doesn't bet.
Yeah.
He doesn't smoke, but
he's not your typical Aussie bloke.
No,
like
he's
Jack
not.
Sort of was.
He's not, but he did come. I think the thing that I found with Wayne and in writing this book is, and I always liked, I've never been got on with Wayne at all. We've always sort of had a bit of a love-hate relationship. I wouldn't say it's been poisonous or anything like that, but we were never close at all. Wayne does play favourites with the media. He manipulates the media. He gets certain journalists to write stories that, you know, he'll word up journos before a press conference. He's not the only coach to do that, but he's very, very smart in manipulating the message about himself and his football team if he needs that to be the case. And even with this book, so when I decided to do this book, the first book I was going to write, well, the book I was going to write was about Jared Hayne. So I'd been...
Not Wayne.
Not Wayne. So I'd been commissioned to write about Jared and just his rise and fall. And it was he was before the courts, his sexual assault case. And me and the publisher just decided that that's just going to be too tricky. It was just... We just thought, let's keep away from this. There's been too many trials, so we'll steer clear of it for the moment. And the publisher said, "Who do you want to write about?" And I said, "I want to write about Wayne. I just find him so complex." And he just got soused into that 21 grand final against Penrith. And here's a bloke in his 70s, still coaching, still at the top of his game. And I wanted to explore that. I knew his great backstory, his interesting backstory, in that he's a self-made man because the father left the home when he was 12, and he just was determined to make something of his life. So I always knew there was a great story there to be told. So he was the first. When I was signed the contract, I'll never forget, I signed the contract on the Friday and I called him straight away because I wanted him.
It wasn't authorised.
It wasn't authorised, but I wanted him to hear it from me. I said, look, I'm going to be writing a book about you. And he went really quiet and he said, look, if you're going to do it, I want you to do it right and I'll give you whatever you want. You can ask me whatever you want. I might stand in your way of talking to family, friends, whoever, which is, to his credit, was great. But I also felt from the beginning that he was trying to manipulate me.
Yeah.
You know, because he wanted the story to be, you know, as he wanted it to be.
But what's your response to that, though?
So I just went and did what a proper journalist should do and went and got all the different, sides of the story. Probably one of the great ones is one involving you when he went to with the Roosters in 06.
Oh, my God. So what did Nick tell you?
Nick told me a lot. Yeah. Nick's quoted, as you know.
I was there. It was me and Nick who did it.
I know.
And
didn't Nick offer Wayne your unit?
No, well, I'm not sure whether it was mine or his, but we both were living down here at the Circular Quay.
Yep.
And I had a unit in the toaster, and Nick had a number of units in the toaster. And I also had a unit up the road in the Astor. I had three apartments in the Astor at the time, which is like literally 100 metres up the road.
Mm.
And this was not authorised by Nick, but Nick did actually offer. I wasn't sure whether it was I was going to move out of my place and Wayne was going to move into my joint, or Nick was going to move out of one of his apartments and Wayne was going to move in there. And it was a good deal, like, by the way, because, you know, we were offering good money. And it was all after around the Ricky Stewart period.
Mm.
And you know, it was just time to make some changes.
Things had to change.
We had to change. And you know, Nick and the board of the Roosters, I was on the board at the time, and we've never been shy to make a change when it's time. You know, things, sometimes you have to make changes. You know, players, you know, give you a bit of pressure, parents give you pressure, player managers give you a bit of pressure, results give you pressure, sponsors give you pressure. So you have to respond. You can't just sit there on your hands and do nothing. And Wayne was a pretty obvious outcome. For us, but it didn't work out too well for us. But at the same time, it didn't work out too well for Wayne at the Broncos.
No, that's right. Well, see, so I explored, this is a great example. Like, so I explored this in the book. Wayne's version was that if it ever got out, as you know, if it ever got made public,
which is what he said to us,
then the deal's off.
Yeah.
But what he doesn't, when he tells that story, what he doesn't say is how the deal, like, it got out and then he didn't, he called Brian Canavan, who was a CEO,
at the Roosters,
and he said, "Is the chairman still solid?" Those were his words to Canavan, who relayed that to Nick. So, in other words, the deal's still on.
Yeah, we never. I can tell you now, neither one of us said a word to anybody.
No,
I can tell you that.
So, which makes me think why that got out. So, but it wasn't another 2 weeks until he called Nick and said, "I'm not coming." Well, he didn't actually call Nick. He got someone to call. He called Canavan.
Hmm.
And I think it was Bruce Hatcher, his accountant, who said, "Look, if you're going to tell Nick to his face, well, at least have the phone call."
And he was in the middle of, and during that period, because he was in the, just to give you back, it's in the book, but the backstory was he didn't want to upset the club he was with because we're going through the semi-final period.
Mm.
And his side was in the semis.
They were in the semis.
And he didn't want his players going, "Well, hang on, what's going on?" So we weren't going to announce it, that's for sure. And he didn't want to announce it because it's not a good look. But he always had the ability under his contract to terminate. And the Broncos, he had his ability to terminate.
He'd been on shaky ground there for a couple of, not shaky ground, but he'd been butting heads with management, like Wayne does with every club he goes to. He needs to be the central figure in the club, and CEOs and chairs don't usually like that.
Well, we were pretty unhappy about it. And of course, as a result of that, we ended up recruiting Opie, and we recruited Freddie. Mm. And we had Anderson and Fittler, Fittler being the Freddie was his apprentice, and Opie's first game we had one marker.
The old one marker.
I never forget it.
Philosophy.
And it wasn't good.
But so we so I interviewed Bruno Cullen, who was the CEO of the Broncos at the time, and he kept hearing about the Rooster stuff before it came out. And Bruno was great for this book. He was very honest. So I interviewed probably about 300 people for the book, as many people on the record as I could, but a lot, you know, talked anonymously, but that's what sources are. But most people went on the record to their credit, and Bruno was one of them. And I said, he said, I don't want you to tell me what Wayne's told you, because I'll just tell you what I know. I'll tell you the truth as I know. And he said that he was calling Wayne for days going, I keep hearing you've done a deal with the Roosters. No. I keep hearing you've done a deal with the Roosters. No. And then it came out. He said, well, I guess you haven't done a deal with Roosters.
Yeah, so we didn't announce it, though. So it came out anyway. And I think – I can't remember. I think Nick might have been overseas at the time when it happened. It wasn't a good outcome. But do you think
Nick confirmed it. Buzz broke it. Buzz and James Hooper broke it for the Telegraph. And Buzz called Nick in Greece.
By the way, Buzz and Nick weren't close then.
No, they weren't. They weren't. No, they – and so Buzz called Nick to confirm it, and Nick did the old – what's that? You're breaking up.
Hung up.
And Buzz was in the Telegraph newsroom, looked at Hooper and said, it's happened.
Yeah. Well, it's funny now, Wayne, if it was Wayne, that is a great example of manipulation. Mm. Like, because, and there would have been some reason for it. He would have had some reason why he's gone, hang on, mate, I've stuffed this up. I made a mistake. I'm not going to look like it was my mistake. I'm going to blame somebody else, but to do it in such a way that it's uncertain as to where the error was and or who has put it out there into the media, because he gave himself an out. He's very clever.
But the suspicion is that Lachlan Murdoch took him to task and said, look, if you go, then your legacy at this club is going to be trashed.
Which what happened.
But like, what happened. Exactly. Lachlan, I approached Lachlan. Lachlan was one of the few people who didn't get back to me for the book.
Well, and that sort of makes sense too, though. From Lachlan's point of view, because, you know, Wayne had a massive legacy at having been in the Broncos. Mm. And you know, you open the door and go out, especially if you come to the Roosters, that's not a good look.
He said he regrets it, though, Bennett. He said he regretted not coming.
Yeah?
Yeah, he quoted him saying that he would have liked to have. He loves big characters. He loves big guys, you know. Yeah. He loved Porky Morgan. He loved Tinkler. Yeah. He loved Singo. He loves, you know, all these really big guys, which I find also interesting in itself, because he's a kid from nothing, you know.
Can you tell me a little bit about him? Give me a little bit of background. Tell me about his backstory.
His backstory. So he's born near Warwick, New Year's Day 1950, and his father, Jim Bennett, was just a rogue. he loved to drink, loved to gamble, and there was hardly any money for the family. Wayne was one of four children, and they just didn't have two 20-cent pieces to rub together. They were broke, and Bennett would often have to go to the pub to try and get the old man. And it wasn't so much that he was a bad drunk. He was just never there for the family. And Wayne's mum, Patsy, was always the grown-up adult in the relationship trying to make things work. And then when he was 12, he just disappeared. When Wayne was 12,
the father
disappeared, and he popped up a few times when Wayne started to make a name for himself as a player in the Brisbane competition. There's a great anecdote about, a very sad anecdote actually, where Jim Bennett comes into the rooms after a game and says, "Where's my boy? Where's my boy?" And Wayne hadn't seen him for years, and Wayne was just sitting down and looked up to him and said, "Where the effing hell have you been?" You know, like,
how old would Wayne be then?
Wayne would have been like 19, 20. So like, he just hadn't had any contact with the father at all. And Wayne was just determined not to, he put it this way, he said he wasn't so much determined not to be his father, but he just knew he had to go to other men to try and to style himself and basically build this persona of who he is. And the biggest influence on his life was his uncle, Eddie Brosnan, who was a hard copper, former Kangaroos player, and just a really hard man. And Wayne wanted to be like his Uncle Eddie in the police force.
So what was he like as a footballer?
He was talented. He played for Queensland, and he played tour matches in New Zealand for Australia. Bob Fulton told me how Wayne, he did barely said a word the whole trip. He just was so shy and unassuming. It really comes out, Mark, in the book, just how introverted he is, just how uncomfortable he is speaking in front of the public. Everyone seems to think, and I call bullshit. I said, I've seen you speak in front of a room of people. He said, it still doesn't come easy for him, but he said the first time he spoke in front of a group of people, he went to water. So he's always had to build himself into the man that he is. And I regardless of whether you like Bennett or not, I found that really interesting.
Yeah, well, that's...
You know, he became the author of his own life. He just said, I'm not just going to, you know, I could go and work in the meatworks in Warwick for the rest of my life and become an alcoholic like my old man, but I'm not going to be that.
It is quite interesting in that, particularly when you... I think a lot of people think that Wayne Bennett, in front of the media, it's more theatre. And he's trying to build a character of himself.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I think it's more theater now. I really do. But I think early on there, and I explore this in the book, is like he just naturally said yes, no answers because he wasn't comfortable with a microphone under his nose.
Just shy.
He was just shy. He's really shy. He's still shy now. Yeah, I found him. He's a really strange cat. Yeah, but that's what made him so interesting to write. When I went up to his farm in Warwick and sat down with him, and he was just so... I could see how nervous he... Not so much nervous, but there was a he's just so wary and standoffish and, you know, take your shoes off and make sure that door's closed. We've got flies here. And I was going, oh, geez, this is going to be good. this is going to be a lot of fun.
As in, like, being a perfectionist?
He's just been really standoffish with me. And he's just, I don't know whether he was trying to put it on me or whether he was trying to be, like, you know, try to maintain the power balance in his favor or what it was. But then we sat down and I turned on the tape 4 hours nonstop. It was like he just, and gave me gold after gold after gold.
Was that because your approach? I mean, like, because normally, I mean, 4 hours of Wayne talking would be, I can't imagine it. Was that because of the way you approached it or the questions you asked?
I went pretty hard. I thought, well, look, I'm not going to get this opportunity to sit down with him at his farm. That's not going to happen too often, so I might as well, you know, hit him with all the big questions. And I did, and he answered them so openly and thoroughly. And he... You know, the thing I really appreciated from Bennett in the whole process, like, he didn't have to talk to me at all. He didn't get a zack out of it. So he could have just put all up all the walls, but he was very raw. Like, there was times there, Mark, where he'd be in tears on the phone to me a few times. Yeah, both of us in tears. Yeah, just talking about his son, Justin, who's mentally disabled. Mm. After having a bad reaction to an injection when he was a baby. There'd be times there where he'd be in tears about that, about his relationship breakdown, about his...
With his wife.
With Trish. If I talk about Trish, he'd get very emotional. So it's a pretty raw... It was a raw process, for sure.
Yeah, he doesn't come across to me as someone who would show vulnerability.
He did. He showed me vulnerability.
And you talk about that in the book.
Very much so.
Do you have any difficulty getting many people to talk about him outside of himself, like people who know him or people who have had experiences with him?
Ricky didn't.
Ricky.
Ricky Stewart did. Ricky said a great quote. He said, I don't believe, this is years ago, he said, I don't believe in Wayne Bennett guruism.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. that's when, because Wayne can throw, as you know, he can throw hand grenades. He likes to upset people. And I think when Ricky was Australian coach, he had a fair bit to say. We remember Ricky replaced him in at the end of 05. Australia lost that Tri-Nations or Four Nations Tri-Nations game in against New Zealand and England. And that's when Bennett did the run at the airport, at Brisbane Airport. And Ricky took over. And I think Wayne had a couple little dog shots at him in the press.
Well, Ricky doesn't stand back either.
No, Ricky's never.
He's just doing his thing. He won't hold back.
No, he does. No,
and he can carry a grudge.
He can. I hadn't noticed.
he won't. Well, he doesn't forget.
No,
and
he doesn't
one
forget.
Of the reasons I love Ricky, I mean, it could be the next book, but one of the reasons I love Ricky because I just know what I'm going to get. And he's to me, he's one of the big characters of rugby league today. And always has been.
I always say to Ricky, I said, you know what I love about you? You stab me in the front.
Yeah.
Well, you know where you stand with him.
Yeah, no, totally.
You know, that's why I like him so much.
I used to train with him and Ronnie Palmer. We used to go to the gym together. And Ronnie Palmer, the Bondi Charmer. And we used to train at Whitworth Park. And it didn't matter what day or what morning of the week it was we were going to the gym. Sticky would have a crack at me. He'd say, mate, what's happened to your biceps? Like literally the day after. He said, haven't you been doing any training? You didn't have enough protein? Did you eat not last night? You'd been on the drink? He would be sledging me from the moment I got in the gym. And like I'm not competing with him. Like we're mates. We're just hanging out together. And Ronnie being a wonderful person as he like always had a laugh and just sort of would. But he'd get you offside straight away and make me train harder.
But
That's his go.
Yeah.
And he was one of the greatest, genuinely greatest sledges of all time. And still is to this very day. I can see a book coming. But like, I just want to go back to Bennett now. So it was unauthorized, but Bennett clearly was very open to you. Mm. People weren't people were forthcoming in terms of opinions about the guy, I mean, and what he's like. If today you had to just summarize Wayne Bennett in two or three sentences. Now you know him better. What would you say about him?
Ooh.
Compared to before, because, I mean, you had a totally different view of him, or didn't your view not change?
I think he's – so I interviewed his daughter, Beth,
yep.
who he's semi-estranged from since the marriage split.
Yep.
I interviewed Trish, and I interviewed Dale, his new partner. The thing that I got out of Wayne is that he's a very complex, complex guy. And Best says a comment in that book, which I think resonates all the way through it. He never dealt with his childhood trauma. He never dealt with what happened to him as a kid. And the only way that he's been able to deal with the fact that the father was so harsh to the family and particularly him, and he never had a male, a dominant male figure in his life, was to be to be a coach and to coach young men, generations of young men. That's how he's basically healed himself. I know this sounds very Oprah, but that's it. Like he gives young footballers what he never had.
Yeah,
that's guidance. That's guidance and leadership and support. But the flip side of that, Mark, is and this is why he falls out with so many of his players, is because that works to a point, but when they are no longer needed, they get too old, they're out of form, whatever, he just cuts them loose. So he gets them so close. That's the way that he coaches. That's the way that he goes about his business. But when just the ruthlessness of football and professional sport, he's got to cut them loose. He's got separation issues, as Steve Renouf says to me.
But do you think that's he's just doing it in the way that's the most effective? In other words,
that's the nature of the beast.
Yeah, I'm not going to sort of wrap you up in pillows and shit like that, and just bullshit to you. Mm. I'm just going to tell you straight, like. Time's over.
That's right.
It's time. But yeah. No, we've had our time. Time's over.
Yeah.
Because I want to talk to you.
A lot of them can't reconcile that because he's been so close to them and such a father figure to them, and then they say, he goes, well, no, I'm not extending you. And they'll go, well, hang on. I thought you were going to look after me forever.
do you think that's a dangerous thing for him to do then? Because as you said right at the very beginning, one of the things that fascinates you about rugby league players is a lot of them come from average, ordinary, or less than ordinary circumstances.
Mm.
It could be parents a problem or poverty or, immigrants into the country, et cetera, running away from something. Then in comes Wayne. They become a bit beholden to him.
Mm.
And at the same time, he's looking after him. He's getting the best out of him, which is his game, get the best out of a player. But then he sort of cuts him loose.
Hmm.
Maybe not in a way that it's meant to be nasty, but just time's over.
Yeah.
Is that a dangerous thing for a coach to be?
I think, but he's been so bloody successful, you know. I don't think he knows any other way.
Apart from his success, what about the individual that he's talking to? I mean, like, so do you think that's a dangerous thing for players?
I would have thought players understand that that's the nature of the beast.
So do you think players know about Wayne's personality? They know who we're talking about?
I think they do. But he gets them so – he manages to earn their trust like no other coach, really. And I find that – that's what I find fascinating, that he's been able to do that through – like, as I said, he's been coaching for 50 years and he's just as relevant to, like, all those South blokes in – you know, when he was there as he was to the teams that he coached in Brisbane when he was a – when he was, you know, a young coach starting out. Like, he's just always been – he's always been able to earn that trust off them. And I think that's what fascinated me, that a 17-year-old man could somehow get a 20-year-old footballer to trust him implicitly. I don't think that's easy to
but
do.
Have you sort of dug into – did he have a technique or have you dug into how that works?
There's a lot in there. I talked to Alfie about it. Like, he socialises with players a lot. He goes out with them.
Have a beer with them or something?
He won't have a beer.
He doesn't drink,
but he'll go out and it's almost a bit of a cliche. Like, he always gravitates to the back of the bus, the team bus, whether it's with cards. Like, I've talked to Alfie about it and I talked to him about it at length. Like, he'll just sidle up to someone and just ask a couple of questions here or there and immediately get their trust, because the great Wayne Bennett wants to know about my family, wants to know about my mum and dad, what they do. Johnny Elias tells a story in the book where, Johnny had come from Sydney to play with South Magpies in the Brisbane competition, and Johnny couldn't crack it with him at all. And then one day after training, they all went out for pizza and they all sat down at this restaurant, and then the only seat available was next to Bennett. And as soon as Johnny said that he didn't know his father, Bennett took him under his wing because he didn't know his father himself.
Can I tell you something about funny? You mentioned Johnny Lyce.
Mm.
His brother, Joel Lyce, was my best friend at school.
I know Joe. Yeah. Good guy.
Best friend at school. And when Joe was 15, their dad died, passed away. And Johnny was much younger.
Yeah.
And I was in maybe 18, 17, a little few years later, and I coached Johnny Lyce in J grade. And this kid could do anything. Like, he was athletic. His athletic ability was unbelievable. He could climb trees. He could play in any position on the football field. He was such a natural footballer.
Mm.
But Johnny suffered from not having a father figure.
Yeah.
And his brother Joe had to leave school and start work to provide for the family. They live around the corner from me.
Right.
And I'll never forget that. And I'll never forget Joey's brother, and I'll never forget the relationship, how Joe looked after his younger brother Johnny, and how much Johnny missed having a father figure in his life. So that's very interesting you should say that to me. Like,
yeah,
that
right.
They both.
Yeah, that's interesting that you should say that to me. Like, it makes sense.
Yep.
And that's it's funny, like, all the way through this book, all the players he gravitates to the most are the ones that didn't have a father or had issues with their father.
So who's
I reckon Wayne, and as I said, I talked to his daughter. Wayne is almost like giving himself therapy by coaching these young blokes, you know, coaching young men to have a special sort of life and a special career, because that's what he didn't have that.
But then he makes a fatal mistake at the end of the period of cutting them loose.
Yeah.
In a way
and he does it in a ruthless manner. Like, he'll just cut it off like that.
And it's sort of like the ultimate abandonment.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
It's like I'm setting you up.
Yeah.
Well, maybe he's not doing it, but from their point of view, from the player's point of view,
yeah,
you set me up.
Yeah,
you,
that's
you,
how they feel.
You brought me along and then you've cut me.
That's how they feel.
Some players have said that?
Yeah, for sure. They talk about it in there. There's a lot of them.
So who was the player?
Not even so much that. Like, I know when he got rid of Kevin Walters and Gary Belcher at the end of 05 as assistant coaches at the Broncos, same thing. Like, they'd won premierships under him and been with him and for a lot of football. And now they were there as assistant coaches and it's like, you're gone.
And Belcher was married to his daughter. Is that right?
No.
No.
Ben Eichen.
Ben Eichen.
Ben
Eichen's
yes. married to Beth.
Yeah. Okay. And does he talk to Ben anymore?
I think it's a strange situation. Like I was very like his marriage breakdown was, I told him and I told all of the Bennetts. I said I'm not gonna approach this in a gossipy way. I don't think there's stuff there that I should go into at all. I don't want to go through the nitty gritty sort of details of how the relationship ended and how hurt everybody is. I didn't think that served a purpose for this book. To me, the thing that stood out the most from that was how people reacted to it.
Yeah.
Because like Wayne has been such a, you know, has moralized on people and footballers and everyone else in the game for so long. And then he, you know, he has an affair and leaves his wife. And it was like everybody was, you know, climbed into him.
Yeah, that's amazing because there was a big sort of morality issue thrown around.
Mm.
I mean, and by the way, he also sort of looked like he was a bit of a moralist himself. I don't drink. You shouldn't. I don't. He didn't play up. He, you know, there was nothing really going on about Wayne. Wayne was just a straight shooter. Went to work. From all accounts, went home and did his thing, and then went, and like we never had any. We didn't participate in his personal playground at all.
No,
because there was nothing there.
No. He was all, and but he, and this is what I also said this to him when I was exploring this part of the book. I said, but I can't, he didn't want me to touch on it at all. And I said, Wayne, you know, you've been very open about your upbringing on Australian Story. You've talked about your two disabled children. I said, I can't ignore that part of your private life. That's, you know, that if you're going to talk about that part of your private life, then I can't just ignore the fact that, you know, you're a former Queensland Father of the Year who.
Was he?
Yeah. That was brought up regularly when he was when his relationship with Dale Cage came out. I interviewed her. Dale was quite interesting. She had a lot to say about how, like, she claims the Broncos never accepted her or Wayne at all after that, after they got together.
Sort of got outed.
Yeah.
Well, Wayne, you know, he coached lots of Origin in Australia. The Kangaroos. He coached, obviously, went through brilliant periods with the Broncos. Did he at any stage mention what were some of the greatest periods in his rugby league coaching career in terms of success?
Yeah, he does. He talks loved all those Broncos years. He loved Alfie and Kevy. You know, they were the two players he loved the most. But I really think that he has got as much out of what he did with the Dolphins this year as any time in his whole coaching career. I think he got as much out of that because everyone was knocking him so hard, you might recall.
Yeah, I remember the beginning of
really.
Season.
And I remember Bennett would call me out of nowhere and he'd say, he'd go, I see they're into me again. They keep saying I'm going to fail. They've been saying it my whole life. I'll prove them wrong again. But he genuinely hated not coaching in 2022. But I just talking to him throughout this season, the Dolphins' first season in the NRL, he just seemed genuinely, he just seemed so not relieved would be one word, but I just think he felt so validated about his own coaching because he had all these, there's no real superstars in that team.
Yeah, bloody good forward
and
pack.
And to do what he, a good forward pack, it is. But to do what he did, I got to say, he never seemed so happy than when they beat the Roosters in the first round.
Oh, my God, I couldn't believe it. And it beat us well too.
Mm.
And Kaufusi just laid
an
into us.
Yeah.
They just literally laid into us.
He was very happy. He said there were players in tears in the dressing rooms after that game. And I just think throughout this year, I know they ran out of path because the depth was always going to be an issue for the Dolphins. But the fact that that he'd taken a team that, and like, they didn't have a, they had young hookers, young halves, so many injuries in those positions. And to be in the top eight for the first half of the season, in their inaugural season, is pretty special.
And they bought well for next year too, especially in the forwards.
Yeah.
Does Wayne talk about, and I often wonder about this myself, that moment when he brought Alfie Langer back to the State of Origin?
Yes, he does.
What was that about?
Well, they needed a halfback, and they lost the second game heavily, and he needed to change it up. But as I reveal in the book, His first call wasn't to Alan Langer.
Oh, really?
It was to Jason Smith.
Wow.
Who was playing in the UK.
Yeah.
And Jason Smith's club had pushed back and said, no, we're not releasing him.
Where was Alan Langer, though? He was in the UK too, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was playing at Warrington, and the coach allowed him to go, but the board weren't that happy. So that was sort of the end of – like, it cost Alfie basically his contract in the UK because they released him. And then Warrington went – their season went south after that period. So but – it was still the – so when Ben had called him and Alfie famously said, what took you so long? It was all clandestine, and it only happened because the New South Wales Rugby League allowed it to happen, really. They were going to push back on it and in the end allowed it to happen. But I know I covered that game. I don't think any of us ever thought in a million years that, you know, Langer would do what he did that night.
And he scored. Yeah, from about 2 minutes away, but only someone Alfie Lane could do.
Exactly. But I think that result, as much as anything, I think he felt very vindicated, Wayne.
Again, he felt like Wayne felt like he had something. It always looked like to me he had something to prove, that I'm the smartest coach in the game and that this is an example of it. But, of course, Gus then followed it up a few years later with Freddie. And between those two.
Mm. And then they went head to head,
yeah,
which was fascinating in itself.
Yeah, did you explore Phil Gould versus Wayne?
I do,
yeah.
I do. Bennett always said, "I never wanted to play Gus ball." He just thought,
what's that mean?
Like the way the Canterbury used to play,
yeah,
like the way the Warren Ryan and Phil Gould Canterbury teams basically, and then Gus with Penrith. That's when Bennett's Broncos teams were coming through. And he wanted to have his own style, basically, which is easy to do, to play an attacking brand of football like those Broncos did, which is easy to do when you have the team that they had.
It was an unbelievable team.
Yeah.
Like, it probably never to be repeated.
No.
I mean, I don't even think Penrith is sort of at that territory.
That 93 team, they say that Broncos team is the best club team ever. That said, I reckon the 98 side was pretty special as well.
Yeah.
So he said, and this is, again, I explore this too, like, and Brian Smith, former Roosters coach, I talked to Smithy quite a lot throughout the Dragons periods, and then when he was at the Roosters coaching against the Dragons in 2010.
That game he lost. that was the grand final. We were winning at halftime. Whatever Bennett did at halftime, turned the game around. They just came
so
in
he walked
there.
So he walked into the room. Bennett walked into the room and said, you're not playing like St. George. Play like St. George, you'll win the game. And walked out.
Serious?
Mm. That's all he said.
That's all it took?
That's all it took.
Because it turned the game around, they won the grand final.
That's all it took.
And of course.
And so Wayne likes to say that story, and I always thought that's bullshit. There's got to be more. He must have said more, and all the players confirmed it. Jamie Soward actually said, I thought, he goes, oh, is that it? And then Sowie on the they had a great first set in the second half. He got a great kick away, and he said, "We're back. We're playing like St. George Illawarra again." But meanwhile, in the Roosters dressing room, and Bennett likes to perpetuate this myth. He says that Brian Smith was like, making all these great sort of tactical
drawing stuff up
on the whiteboard and all that. And I talked to players, including Braith and Astor, and I said, "Did Smithy confuse the shit out of you in that second half?" He said, "No." I said, "I think Wayne's made some some poetic license about himself there." But Bennett, but Brian, to his credit, says, he goes, Wayne's biggest. It's easy to talk like that. It's easy to have this, as Ricky said, guruism about yourself when you've got some star-studded, players in your team. So that's what I think his premierships with St. George and what he did with the Dolphins this year, I think they're bigger coaching successes than what he ever did at the Broncos.
If I look at Wayne, though, he sort of created a bit of a chasm in St. George when he left. Then he did the same at Newcastle.
Mm.
And to some extent, he did the same at South.
Mm.
And he had players following him as well. So he took people with him.
And he also says, I'm not going to take any players from you. And then he does.
Yeah.
Mm.
And then there was one player in particular. I can't remember who he was. He went from Brisbane to Broncos to St. George, St. George to Newcastle.
Darius Boyd.
And I felt sorry for Darius at the end of his career because I felt as though he was an example of one of the ones who got abandoned.
Yeah.
Did you talk to Darius?
I did talk to Darius. Yeah, but I think the thing is, though, I reckon And even the Dragons, like the Dragons are really upset that he left. They're very upset with the players that he took. And they were also very upset when he was leaving Newcastle. I remember he basically had done a deal with the Dragons to return to Wollongong, and then he did a deal with the Broncos at the last minute and left the Dragons high and dry.
Which is sort of what he did with us.
Which he did with you guys, yeah.
And you could say that there's
a pattern.
There's a pattern. I mean, you could say that.
Wayne doing what's Wayne, best for Wayne.
Correct.
Yeah, he does. But Peter Dowse, I interviewed for the book, he said all the good things that he did for our club outweigh the bad things when he left.
Yeah.
And I think that's like what happens with a lot of the relationships that he has, whether it's players or former CEOs or chairs or whatever. Like, I think all the bad things that they've experienced with Wayne is outdone by the good that he does for them.
Do you think Webby then maybe part of Wayne's character is that and one of the reasons he gets attracted to join clubs with big characters, you know, like maybe one of the reasons why he liked the idea of joining the Roosters with Nick there, et cetera, is because Wayne actually not only wants to win the competition for the club and the players that he's coaching, but he wants to compete. He quite likes the intellectual game.
He does.
Why he takes on Phil Gould. Why, you know, like he loves, for example, he loved beating us. He loved beating Trent Robinson in that game. It wasn't just about Dolphins beating the Roosters, but I'm going to show this young bloke, this coach, how to play 100%. Game. Why I'm going to beat Brian Smith. He's in 2010.
He's got a huge chip on his shoulder. He does. Yeah. And I think that comes from his upbringing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this will get a few people offside. I think it's a Queensland thing.
Oh, my God.
He explains this in the book. Like, he wrote this in one of his other earlier books, and I explored it with him, and it's just like, and I think it was the Broncos mindset, especially against all of those Sydney teams early on there. It's like it was a really weird thing that he said. He said, you know, you don't have to be from Sydney to be special. You don't have to be from Sydney to be somebody in this world. And I reckon that's an old Queensland thing. For someone from country Queensland growing up, you know, he had that chip on their shoulder, and they love it.
And Wayne feeds right into the Queensland narrative as a character. His whole character feeds right into the Queensland narrative. It probably right now he's feeding right into the Dolphins. He probably said, listen, you're all Johnny come latelys. No one's given you a chance. We're from Queensland. We're the next Brisbane side. We're going to take Broncos, then we're going to take the Roosters, then we're going to beat everybody.
Yeah.
And he maybe got into their head. He is I don't blame him for doing the best for Wayne Bennett. Mm. Like in business, CEOs do this shit all the time. They're doing it all the time.
Yeah.
But they build the team up. They build great collegiate sort of relationships. They build great cultures. But they're also doing it for themselves too. Mm. They've got to earn the right amount of money. Mm. And when the opportunity comes to sort of jump ship and go somewhere better, maybe a better challenge, they do it. I mean, Wayne is he's a coach, but he's the CEO, really, of the team. He's the ultimate CEO, Wayne. And I don't blame him for these things. I mean, I wouldn't employ him for those reasons.
Mm.
But I don't blame him either. I don't think it's a thing you can blame Wayne Bennett for being Wayne Bennett and doing the best for himself.
I just think he's, like, as I explained, like, I think he just has always tried to, like, he was always told, you're not going to be anything.
Yeah.
You know? And I think he's always chasing that, trying to live up to that, like that reputation he's built for himself.
Do you think that Wayne Bennett is more liked or disliked just from the general people who think about him? Like, not necessarily players being involved, but just the general view.
It's hard. That's a really interesting question. I think there's like begrudging respect.
Definitely respect.
There's definitely respect. Whether he's liked or not, I still don't know if people aren't completely get him or understand him. I like to think with this book it goes pretty close. He can be such a narcissist sometimes. He'd like, have you worked out who the real Wayne Bennett is yet? Like, he'd say that to me regularly.
That's fucking with you though.
Sorry?
That's fucking with you. That's like fucking with your brain.
I know. Have you worked out who the real Wayne Bennett is? And I said, oh, I reckon I'm getting close.
and do you think Wayne really cares whether people like him or not?
Yes, I do. I do.
He says
he doesn't give a fuck. He says it in the first chapter of the book. He said, I want you the book to be right. I'll give you what you want. But and if and then people can make up their own mind. If they don't like, if they like me, I don't give a shit. I think he does.
And why is the book called The Wolf You Feed?
So there's an old Cherokee saying about the good and the bad wolf in all of us. The grandfather Cherokee talks to the young grandson about, you know, the two wolves, the good and the bad, and the grandson says, well, which one are you? And he goes, the one you feed. Which one, the good wolf or the bad wolf? With Wayne, I think it's there's two. There's the man and there's the coach. And the older that he gets, he's competing between those two wolves.
Is the man emerging?
No, I think it's the coach. I don't think he'll ever retire, because I don't think he knows anything else. Everything that Wayne Bennett is wrapped up in him coaching football teams. He'll do it until he's in the grave.
Well, Webby, I'm glad. I want you to sign this book for me, but I'm going to read this book. If it's anything like the book you wrote on Jack Gibson, it's going to be I can't put it down style book. I really appreciate coming in. A real divisive character, but nonetheless extraordinarily interesting. Thanks very much, Webby.
Thanks, Mark.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host
Niñas Bien podcast. We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.